G'day science fiction, fantasy and horror fans wherever you may be. I'm your host and editor Nuke, and I'm here to welcome you to the pilot issue of Antipodean SF in audio. Whether you're listening to this on the radio, on your iPod or in your lounge, you will enjoy the fine selection of fiction which in future will usually be read by the authors that created it. Antipodean SF has a fine record in the production and presentation of flash fiction on the web and in the promotion of its contributors, many of them authors previously unpublished in any format. And we will continue that proud record as we publish in both written and audio format in the future. In the meantime, why not grab the hand of the person beside you, just be a little afraid, squeeze it tight, open your mind, and prepare your ears for an onslaught, because it's Antipodean SF story time. The first story in this pilot issue is by Cressetta McLeod. Ninja Nemesis won a ninja short story contest at Conflux in 2009, and was subsequently published on the Undead Backbrain website before its submission to Antipodean SF, where it appeared with some changes to the original text in issue 152. Cressetta is an emerging Aussie fantasy author. She has won 5 assorted awards at various cons, had stories published in anthologies such as Festive Fear and Shades of Sentience, and produces reviews for Aurealis. Cressetta has also written 4 currently unpublished novels. Without further ado, here it is, Ninja Nemesis by Cressetta McLeod.
Ninjas don't collect their super. Kind of a ninja wearing glasses, complaining about rheumatism, so other ninjas kill them off. I found myself slowing down. I dropped a throwing star, a shuriken, my foot. I was wearing my wooden animal paws, but it went right through. Then later, as I snuck into a ninja-free zone, an urchin said, "That man's pretending he's hiding." The shame. I was bound for ignominious involuntary retirement. Time to disappear. I became a Sydney taxi driver then. I was making a living selling secrets discussed in the back of my cab, but my hearing started to go. I can hardly say, "Would you mind repeating that? I didn't quite catch what you said." By then, I was pushing 90, so I bought myself a retirement unit. When Doris Darkly complained in the dining room, "Pass the salt. Why do you hog it at your end?" I ran up the wall, did a backflip onto the table, and booted the salt into her disgruntled face, making a condiment-shaped hole. Fred bumped me with his walking frame, so that I poured a spoonful of hot soup painfully into my trousers. I twisted his frame into an insoluble metal puzzle, strangling him. Okay, I just imagined those incidents. But I did like scaring them into heart attacks if they ventured out after dark. And little ninja bombs with lots of smoke kept the maintenance people busy looking for fire hazards. Deeds perhaps unworthy of our founder, Prince Yamato, but fun, and they kept my hand in. The other residents asked about my life. I muttered about military involvement, until a real ex-military bloke asked about campaigns and ranks. Couldn't allow that, so he had to die. I snuck into his unit and suffocated him. They thought sleep apnea got him. Nosy fat bastard. I'm a retired ninja. I can undertake mercenary malevolence, I once proclaimed over a game of rummikins. Don't be ridiculous, young man. That's a species of turtle, snorted Gladys Whipplethorpe. The insult. She had to die. I used kendo stick techniques as she negotiated steps in the gardens. Her rickety little legs snapped. She cracked her head satisfyingly and became quite messily dead. Later, Fred Featherstonehoff told me about his daughter-in-law, who had shoved him into the retirement village and taken his home. I stabbed her with my kunoichi. I took her handbag, her watch, and her dignity. I melted into the walls with ninja cunning. Plenty of ninja opportunities, even in retirement, you see. I started venturing out at night. I set the dogs barking hysterically. I terrified virgins by peering through their bedroom windows. Four thugs surrounded me. I backflipped and broke the first one's neck, slipped my ninja toe sword between the ribs of another, tripped two others with my shoge, sickle on a chain, then put out their eyes. My old heart wants to give out with joy. I'd die happily amongst the bloody dead. Ninja to the end.
Welcome back to the Antipodean SF pilot audio issue. Many thanks to Chrisetta McLeod for the narration of her story Ninja Nemesis. And now I'm proud to announce a story by an author who has contributed more fiction to the magazine than anybody else. This is Dr. Sean A. Saunders. Sean has written a total of 175 fantastic stories for us here at Antipodean, and most of those stories have already been published. Regular readers of the magazine will know about Sean because at least one of his stories has appeared in each issue for many years. Unfortunately, Sean stopped writing in 2009 and hasn't written anything since. On the upside, however, I still have a few Saunders classics in the bottom of my story swag to keep us entertained for another 10 or so issues. We're going to miss you, Sean, when those stories run out. And a bit about Sean. Sean Saunders is a psychologist and he lives at the beachside suburb of Merriweather in Newcastle, New South Wales. He particularly enjoys Asimov's Foundation Universe and stories from the Golden Age of SF. As already mentioned, he's a regular contributor to the magazine and a winner of the 2003 and 2004 Anti-SF Awards, something we haven't done since, and the inaugural 2005 SF SSC, which was awarded by the University of Newcastle, I think, in that year, 2005. His novel Mall City 14 has been favourably compared with both 1984 and Brave New World. Here is his story Zero, first published in March 2011, issue number 153. Zero by Sean A. Saunders. Angus Fairweather, CEO of Living Earth Petroleum, was having the worst day of his life. Zero-point energy devices, barely larger than the four-slice toaster in his kitchen, with shiny stainless steel construction and neatly equipped with eight standard power sockets on one side, had appeared on street corners and pavements everywhere throughout the city during the night. The plain English instructions written on the side of the units were simple. This unit will provide 10 kilowatts of continuous power indefinitely. By mid-morning, people everywhere, mums and dads, grannies and grandpas, tired of the escalating utility bills, were plugging their televisions and heaters and hairdryers and curlers into the remarkable units, marvelling at the gift from wherever. The following night, and the next, and the ones after that, more and more of the devices appeared in towns and cities and hamlets and villages across the lands. No one knew where the devices came from or how they operated. And aside from the classroom academics and scientists who refused to look at them, no one really cared by the power brokers, the silent ones who moved the pieces on the international chessboard, deciding who would pay how much for what and for how long. Because by afternoon, Living Earth Petroleum share prices began to backslide. This was not the way it was meant to be. There was an elite ruling class completely hidden from the ignorant masses, with national governments acting as a buffer, a pacifier of sorts, puppets doling out hollow platitudes or emotive-laden patriotic calls to arms whenever the need arose, which was more and more often nowadays. In the past, Angus's company and their secret subsidiary, Power Securities, had managed to squash, buy, intimidate, or assassinate every promising inventor of alternate energy supplies. From the backyard geniuses toiling with soldering irons, baling wire, and old fan motors in budget labs above their garages, to well-heeled internet billionaires who'd gotten a little too philanthropic with their investment choices. This time, no matter what the authorities did, no matter how many units were confiscated, citizens arrested, more units appeared, and people everywhere began to unplug from the great charade. Angus awoke in a lather of cold sweat to the voice of his bedroom plasma screen, preset to rouse him at 8:30 each day with the morning news broadcast. It had just been a bad dream. Too much rich food and expensive wine after the quarterly board meeting. He thumbed the volume on the bedside remote. Using blueprints downloaded from the internet, a local electronics repairman has constructed what appears to be a device capable of providing free energy. That's right, energy from the void. It's no joke. Behind me, our breaking news team is filming a live demonstration of the device in operation in our studio as we broadcast to you. The unit, hardly larger than a kitchen toaster and without any connections to utilities or petrol generators, has been powering 6 studio spotlights, a plasma screen and a television camera for 2 hours. Scientists contacted by the station have refused to inspect firsthand and declined to comment, other than suggesting that it must be a hoax. However, Angus turned the radio off in disgust. The real nightmare had just begun. Listening to the pilot audio edition of the Antipodean SF podcast, and that was Zero by Sean A. Saunders. While we're on a good thing, let's stick with it. Here's another story by the inimitable Mr. Saunders, who always has a subversive social message somewhere in his fiction, either blatantly or covertly. This story first appeared in issue 153 of Antipodean SF, which was online in February 2011. An Accident Going Somewhere to Happen by Sean A. Saunders. The economy is as strong as it has ever been, the Treasurer declared to thunderous applause from the assembled press. His wolfish grin gaped wider. Waggling an admonitory finger, he cautioned, but let's not allow hasty halfback claims and exaggerations paraded before us as supposed climate change science distract us from the real work, the actual hard yards that are required to keep our economy healthy. The best minds assure me that we are far from reaching any consensus on climate issues, or even if there are in fact any climate issues to be concerned about. The bottom line is, the economy won't grow by itself. The press cheered again, and the Treasurer sensed that it was time for a coup d'etat. He nodded to an assistant out of camera view, and an infant was thrust into his waiting arms. He held it up high. It is our responsibility to provide for the next generation, and that means sustaining sensible economic growth. Let's build a better tomorrow today. In the aftermath of the media event, after the staged posing, the Treasurer mingled with the remaining guests, immensely enjoying the afterglow. This was his favourite time. For a moment or three, the Treasurer could loosen his tie and mingle with the chosen masses, parrying friendly quips. A reporter blocked his way. Circus face switched on hurriedly. The Treasurer said, smiling, "I don't recognise you." "We've met already," the other assured him. "Just moments ago, in fact." Iron bars slammed down protectively. "Nope, I can assure you we did not." The reporter smiled. "It must be confusing for you. It seems weird for me too, given it was many years ago." Alarm bells rang loud. The Treasurer looked about. Not a flunky in earshot. And security? Oh, stuffing his face at the fucking buffet. Heads would roll. He turned back to the interloper. There was something about the media pass on his jacket lapel. The reporter noted the Treasurer's gaze. "Yes, my name is the same as that of the little boy you just held up to the cameras." A puzzle solved. Temporary relief. "It had to be me," the reporter explained, his face pained, "because of this press release. I'd been linked with you for almost all my life." Smiling now, he continued, "Oh, you were very successful. You became Prime Minister, and that was the problem. You were an accident going somewhere to happen. By building a better tomorrow today for yourself and your cronies, you destroyed tomorrow. You consumed the future as though it was an afternoon snack, a pastry from that buffet over there. In my time, there's not a drop of oil left anywhere. The Amazon is a wasteland, and the Arctic tundra and waters blackened, and sea levels have risen everywhere. Where we stand right now is underwater, in point of fact." The reporter, whatever madman he was, drew a large caliber revolver from under his jacket. "It stops here for both of us," he said. "I can't get back, and you won't be going forward. I can't change my past, but I can nudge 1,000 futures." Smiling engagingly, he levelled the weapon and said, "Let's build a better tomorrow today." Well, fine folks, we've reached the end of this pilot edition of Antipodean SF in audio. Please keep a lookout for the first full edition of the magazine, issue 155, online in May 2011. In that issue, we'll feature many fine speculative stories, and we'll do our best to deliver audio editions of them for your listening pleasure. Tune in for Seven Bullets by Jules Carey, Somewhere by Sean A. Saunders, Night Falls at the Dream Markets by Elizabeth Carroll, This Alien Landscape by Chris Large, The Genetic Time Traveller by David Gray, How Technology Threatened My Manhood, that sounds like an interesting one, by Todd McCoy, Over Too Soon by Nicholas J. Carter, Moving House by Antoinette Ryder, Nanobrains by Kevin J. Filand, and Old Tidings by J.C. Mangold. Antipodean SF Audio is delivered under a Creative Commons non-commercial, no derivatives license. In other words, share it, broadcast it, and spread it around as much as you like, but please tell everybody where it came from and keep the license detached and don't break it up into little bits and pieces. The music in this issue of Antipodean SF was provided by Canadian electronic ambient band Roe and is used with permission on a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution license. We heard excerpts from Day Into Night and Cedar Leaf from the album Cedar Leaf. If you like Antipodean SF, please consider making a donation at our main website www.antisf.com.au. And you'll be eligible for a warm, fuzzy feeling in the knowledge that you've helped us to promote fine science fiction, fantasy, and horror from the underside of the Earth.